next to break. But whatever had happened, it wasn't moving, and that was good. He ejected the shell. The savage driver in the cab was trying to make the engine turn, maybe get away and warn the others. It didn't matter. Shot three was a headshot, blowing helmet and brain across the inside of the cab. The round had been moving so fast that the body didn't even move in one direction or another. The head disappeared and the body of the savage marine driver remained upright, as though the only thing wrong was that its head was missing.
"Did you give him the order to fire, sir?"
shouted Andres, knowing damn well that no such order had been given. His tone was businesslike and military, ready to instill order into the developing chaos before it got completely out of hand.
"Negative,"
said Rex, who was crawling on top of the APC, crawling toward the big sniper to stop the firing, scrabbling, really, as fast as he could. Each shot was a potential come and get me cry to every savage for kilometers and kilometers. But the wild man was already sliding off the front end of the APC and running for the stalled delivery truck, ejecting a shell and sliding in a new one as fast as you please, his long, loping strides taking him forward quickly.
"What do we do, sir?"
Andres asked. But Rex was already running, not to catch the out-of-control giant, but to support him in case he ran into more savages they hadn't seen. Yelling at himself because this wasn't the mission, knowing he should have taken the trigger nuke into the nest by himself. It would have been much easier that way, even if he hadn't survived. He could have detonated at any moment and probably ruined the ship. He definitely would have ruined the planet for the savages and humanity. The APC started forward, cruising up slowly to speed, pursuing the two running men. But Wildman made it to the stranded truck first. Rex could hear the big man breathing heavily, gasping something. Words. At the time, he didn't register it. He was too busy scanning the four directions of the intersection for any kind of savage response to the shots. The big man reached the back of the truck, smashed the lock with the butt of his rifle, and jerked open the cargo doors. It was then that Rex heard it, heard what the sniper was mumbling almost incoherently.
"I promised. I promised. I promised."
Rex turned and saw what lay beyond the open doors. Survivors huddling in the dark of the cargo vehicle, scared and dirty, staring wildly at the big man who was crying and repeating that he'd promised. Chapter 57. McAfee was working on the delivery truck's ignition cards. The little gnome had lifted the maintenance hood and was sticking Bud out and going on about it always being the tarned ignition card. A moment later, he had it out and was inspecting it, squinting behind his thick glasses at its surface. Then he spit on it, rubbed it along the leg of his dirty fatigues, and threw himself into the guts once more to reinstall it.
"We need to get off this road ASAP," said Andres with no small amount of urgency.
Davis had left the APC to plot their next move with them. Greenhill and Martin had taken up overwatch positions to guard the two avenues the savages had used in their convoy. And the wild man was standing near the civilians, who were alternately thanking him and sobbing. Several had come forward to hug him, and he seemed to awkwardly endure these overtures, made all the more difficult because he was so large and because he would not let go of his rifle. The civilian's leader was a thin, almost emaciated woman. She came hesitantly over to Rex, Andres, and Davis.
"I don't know who you are, but I just want to say thank you. I thought we were done for. Thank you."
"You're safe now, ma'am," said Andres, trying to deal with her quickly and get things moving. He knew they were anything but what he'd just promised.
She continued, heedless of the NCO's desire to hustle, swallowing hard and trying to find the word she needed. Her eyes were hollow and haunted, but there was a fire, deep down, an awakening. "We come from a SEAG research center out on the Margaes Sea. We've been hiding from the savages for weeks, in communication with the resistance until that collapsed about 2 weeks ago. We had a pretty good idea What was? She stopped, turned back to the others and waved her hand, sobbing silently, her bony shoulders heaving once. Then she caught herself.
We know what's going on down here. We knew where they were taking us, I'll be honest.
Big tears filled her haunted eyes.
I didn't have much hope left. Not for our world. Not even for us.
Rex stood there listening and running through the HUD's map functions. Truth be told, he was busy trying to find a way for them to drive themselves out of here, so that they could get back to the mission. Then he heard the sergeant major say, "We'll get you out of here, ma'am."
What about the rest?
She asked.
Half the planet's down here. That was the resistance's last estimate.
Ah, began the sergeant major. We don't have a plan for that at present, but we're going to do our best.
She nodded, thanked them again, and returned to the cluster of survivors. There's no way they have half the planetary population down there, said Captain Davis. Not that it really matters how many. It's still far more than we can help. We couldn't rescue them if we tried.
I know that, ma'am, but what are we going to say right now?
Andres kept his voice low so the survivors wouldn't overhear.
We got to move, or we'll be joining them in those bubbles before long.
Rex spoke.
Sergeant Major, get the truck ready to move. I'll take Sergeant Greenhill and Specialist Martin in the APC. We'll go for the nest. That should draw their fire. I want you and Captain Davis to get the survivors out of here. Access that private government subway the captain mentioned. Commandeer a train, drive the tracks, or make them all march and leave the stragglers. I don't care. But make it back to the LZ. We'll plant the nuke and join you by the time the Chang arrives.
The sergeant major seemed unsure about this sudden change of mission. Not unwilling, but unsure.
Make it happen, Sergeant Major. You came here with the 25th to rescue the survivors. You can rescue these, and I came here to destroy that ship. I'll do that.
The sergeant major nodded slowly, then he gave a roger and went off to make it happen. Captain Davis turned toward Rex, but she didn't face him directly. She cleared her throat and looked off into the darkness of one of the tunnels.
I'll say this once, and then you can do whatever it is that you're going to do, which, because you're Tyrus Rex, well, that means what it means, doesn't it?
Rex said nothing.
There are probably millions of survivors on this planet right now, in various states. Not everyone died in the fighting, and if they didn't die and they weren't captured, then they're alive, somewhere. If you set off your trigger nuke, and if what I know about those things is correct, then yes, you'll probably take out the savage ship. Fine. But have you considered that this entire world, as every hydrogen molecule cascades into a chain nuclear reaction, will become lifeless within an hour?
She stopped, waiting for Rex to say something, or indicate some human gesture from behind his immobile armor. But he did nothing and said nothing.
Are you really willing to kill so many innocent people in the process, Rex? This isn't some backwater planet with just a few thousand from a colony ship still getting their footing. This is New Vega. You will kill millions. I'm sure of that, Tyrus. I'm 100% positive. The only thing I'm asking is, and I've...
She stopped and turned away from him, lowering her head and pinching her eyes. He heard her suppress some cry, maybe.
I think I've earned at least the right to ask what I'm going to ask next. I lost my crew, my ship, here.
Hell, she laughed and threw out her arms.
Probably even my career. And believe me, I feel shallow just saying that in light of the situation of the people that crazy man just rescued. You'd have to have known me before the last 5 weeks to understand what it all meant to me, how far I was willing to go to do whatever it takes for one more pay grade. But the last 6 weeks have changed me. Life has changed me. Every life is precious in a galaxy that does nothing but chew us up and spit us out. And we keep trying, Tyrus. We keep throwing ourselves into hyperspace to beat the odds, running into hostile and strange worlds, deadly aliens, and even our nightmare selves. Why?
She stopped as though waiting for an answer, as though realizing how foolish it would be to expect one. Not from Tyrus Rex, war criminal, or savior, depending on whom you asked.
We almost beat them here. The Coalition did. We almost beat them, and I know there were mistakes made. But that's not the best of us. That was a bunch of rink-knocker glory hounds seeking to promote themselves. Everyone looking out for their own skin. We didn't send our best, not by a long shot. And if we did, well, then maybe we need to get better. But nuking worlds into useless oblivion isn't the answer. The answer is we get good and beat the savages without resorting to doomsday weapons. Because one day, Tyrus, one day, we'll be down to one last world. Just like Earth once was before we seeded the galaxy. Is that when we start fighting? When there's almost nothing left to fight over?
She stopped, made a face that said she was disgusted with herself and was about to walk away. But she didn't.
I watched you lead, she said. I watched these men and myself fight under you. I even heard them talking about you when they thought you were the colonel. Where the idiots who ran their little attack yesterday failed, you'd have won. If you had been in charge, things would have been different. So I'm asking you, Tyrus. No, I'm begging you. Let's leave. I'll help you forge and a force, even if the other governments won't support it, a foreign legion. And we'll come back here and beat the savages on the ground and pull those people out of the storage bubbles. We save this world, then we can save the galaxy. Because, Tyrus Rex, every life is damn important. The galaxy has an edge, and it's always trying to kill us. Every day.
Chapter 58. Davis stood back, watching for some change she'd effected in the armored man and known war criminals standing in front of her. Some sign that she'd, well, not necessarily changed the fate of the galaxy, or even of this planet, but that maybe, just maybe, she'd changed one man's heart. And perhaps that was all the difference it actually took to change the galaxy. Tyrus Rex removed his battle-scratched and worn helmet. The face beneath it was just as stoic as the iron mask of death the helmet presented to every enemy the galaxy could throw at one person. What she saw was a man slightly into middle age, normal, almost to the point of being nondescript. A professional soldier. No more and no less than all the others who served in all the different military organizations throughout the hyperdrive-connected worlds. In that, he was like them all, and you would have been hard-pressed to pick out anything particularly remarkable about him. Other than the eyes. It was the gunfighter blue eyes that made him different. Not because they were blue, no, not that at all. But because they'd been everywhere there was to go, seen everything there was to be seen, even the things you didn't want to see and hoped you'd soon forget. In those eyes, there was that, and all the rest of it too. People always remember the eyes of Tyrus Rex when recalling some happenstance meeting in some unlikely combat backwater. They were like looking into a well of endless worlds you'd never know the deeps of. And then he began to answer her. And each word he spoke was like a gunshot that slammed into her and made her realize how little she understood of him, the conflict, and the galaxy. Stark 247. That's how he began. The words meant nothing to her. And probably no one else living in the galaxy at the current moment, in its turn about the spiral, understood their significance anymore. 50 years after the destruction of Mars, continued Tyrus,
I was on a scout trader, working security along the old Bandos run. Big Denver class Q freighter. We were running first contact and survey out that way for the New Horizon Company. Captain was doing trade where he could. The ship's astrogator picked up a previously unsurveyed world that looked life-habitable. It was a short jump from our last destination, so the captain made for it. His name was Stark. It was the 247th world he'd surveyed.
Tyrus Rex paused and looked away, watched the others working on the wheeled vehicle truck as though he had little confidence they'd ever get it started. And with an apprehensive conviction that at any moment they'd get jumped by more savages and everything would get just a little bit harder. Without looking back at Davis, he began to speak again, low and just between the two of them. But the words were powerful in their clarity and truth. They dispelled what was known and the fiction of history, because, as she'd come to understand, she was talking to an eyewitness. No slick reproduced entertainment manufactured by the winners. No agenda-driven scholarly tome that begged to be taken seriously just because of its price tag in the store.
On all spectrums, the planet looked dead. No signatures. But as we got close, we were seeing structures. No life, but structures. At first we thought dead civilization that nuked itself out of existence. We'd seen that before. But this society was on par with Earth in her heyday, still had operational satellites running in degrading orbits. Cities easily could have topped out at 20 million, estimated global population of at least 7 billion, and there wasn't a single living thing we could find. We flew the surface for about 2 weeks, setting down inside cities that hadn't heard the sound of an engine in years. There'd been a fight of some sort in a few of the cities, nothing major. No global nuclear exchange between factions. So we looked closer, went in and checked out the buildings. Stark wanted to find out what had happened. From their art, we could tell they'd been equine humanoids, horsemen we called them. Beautiful art. Advanced early stage solar exploration, but no tech anywhere. From a simple circuit and wiring all the way up to their computer systems, it was all missing, completely stripped and gone across the entire planet.
How?
Asked Davis, her voice tight with emotion hanging on the story. It was a mystery. One we didn't think we'd solve because of a mandatory rendezvous window closing in on us. The captain made his report on our last orbital pass. And then, almost by accident, we spotted it.
Rex turned his head back to her, staring at her with those depthless blue eyes that had seen everything there was to see, done everything that needed to be done when no one else was willing to do it.
Out in the desert wastes, we spotted the remains of a large camp, along with a rough cargo starport that had been built in a hurry. Something like that was well beyond the civilization's ability. Extraplanetary launch was still a big effort for them. It was out of place. So we sat down and explored it. We found prison camps, hundreds of miles wide, and cramped quarters even at that. There were anchor pads for microforged printers where raw materials could be broken down and packaged for long-term storage, like for stellar flight.
Davis rubbed her shoulders as if the tale was making her cold. The savages had that tech before they left Earth.
Rex nodded. Then we found the ovens and the pits, trenches, really. We put it all together after that. Savages had set down on that world and stripped it clean. We documented everything we could, then left. I followed the investigation for a long time afterwards. A scientist with a knack for history ran the planetary research for 22 years. Just putting the pieces together.
Davis inclined her head and squinted at Rex. She'd thought she'd misheard him when he mentioned the destruction of Mars, and she'd wondered why she'd never heard of Stark 247. She stood now wondering just how old the man before her was. But she didn't dare ask the question and break up his narrative.
This was the most she'd ever heard Tyrus Rex speak by orders of magnitude.
On the day when we stood there looking at all the cages that ran for those hundreds of miles and listened to the wind moaning across the plain and through the tattered camps as we looked down at rivers of bones, we didn't understand it all. But in the end, we figured it out. It just took time. You see, about the time Earth hit Mars with a crust buster to restore order to the home system, the savages discovered Stark 247. They set down with a small flotilla of ships. At first, they tried to convince the Equi, that's the name the scientists gave them, that they were friends, come from another world to help. The Equi fell for it, and in time the savages were worshipped as gods, which was fine by them. They already think they're gods. It suited them. And for the next 30 years, they played factions off one against the other until they controlled the entire planet through a complex overstate. Then they built the camps and said that anyone who didn't think like them was mentally ill and needed to be re-educated. But really, they were just death camps. And a little more, a factory of sorts, along with a shipping terminal. Large sections of the population over the course of many years began disappearing to the camps with the help of Equi-loyalists. These loyalists worked the whole production queue set up to break down every technological material on planet and package it for long-term storage during spaceflight. It was all shuttled up to the Hulk in orbit until nothing was left. Probably not more than 10,000 savages in that Hulk. They made the Equi turn on themselves and assist in their own genocide. And everyone thought they were doing it for the greater good. But the savages couldn't have cared less about any of that.
They needed supplies, said Davis, looking around, as if expecting to see more savage marines walking right into their midst. Just like these.
Yeah, said Rex. So they stopped over for 30 years to top off their inventory, like they were at some roadside market and power station.
And the Equi? They never even resisted? Never fought back?
Rex checked his hand cannon.
By the time the Equi came to their senses, it was too late.
That scientist speculated that the last of them perished a good 5 years before the savages finally pushed off for deep space again.
I don't understand. They had a developed world. Why not just make their little utopia there?
You know why?
No, said Davis, shaking her head. I don't.
The answer is easy, and no one likes it because they want to think there's some other reasonable explanation to the madness, but there isn't. Trust me, I know better than anyone. The answer is because they're not human anymore. The savages gave that up for whatever they found out there in the dark, so they spent those last 5 years strip mining on a scale we've never seen. And they poisoned every river and ocean doing it. We thought it was just the lay of the land when we were first circling, but it wasn't. They killed the Equi, then killed all life on the planet. You can still go there. It's a dead world, it's ruined, but it's there. That's the savages.
He paused and watched her like he was looking for something that wasn't disbelief because he didn't care whether she believed him or not. Like he was looking to see if she was someone who'd do something about what he was telling her. If she was one of the rare few who cared enough to wake up. Or if even now her mind was trying to find a way to go back to sleep and let someone else handle the savage problem. Which was most people as far as Tyrus Rex was concerned. He'd learned that from experience.
They've progressed beyond all this.
His voice was stone-cold truth. He spoke slowly, clearly, making sure she was getting every word and that there was no mistake. Because this was the important part. This was the part she needed to hear.
They cannot be given an inch, a moment, even a week to fester. If you find them, you destroy them as fast as possible because they are masters of exploiting your weakness. I've seen it all. I've worked with others. I've watched people try to bargain with them, reason with them, deal with them, and in the end, it's the same. They're destroyed or they win. I've personally seen them ruin a dozen human worlds, 3 alien worlds, and 4 undiscovered species worlds that were like stumbling into a graveyard where there should have been a town. The galaxy is a big place that doesn't talk a lot, even among the coalition worlds. Just imagine all the things they've done and gotten up to out there in the dark where we've never been. They've been out there a long time, and they risk destruction every time one of their hulks shows itself to strip all that tech and raw materials. What are they doing out there?
Davis turned her head, then looked back up at Rex as he continued.
What we remember about the time they left Earth is fuzzy at best. Things were falling apart. Keeping records wasn't a priority. Survival was. But most accept that there were over 3,000 Lighthugger-class colony vessels. Sure, some died out there, found the wrong civilization to mess with, hit a star, wiped themselves out. But out of 3,000, that leaves plenty that have survived. And the one thing in common, the one thing, is complete insular belief. Total xenophobia. Even for other savages, we aren't human to them, and they're not even human anymore.
Until now.
How's that?
Total xenophobia for other savages. Until now.
Rex grunted.
Until now.
He rolled his shoulders, feeling the tightness in his muscles.
I'm going into the Savage Hulk today, and I'm going to blow it sky high, because killing more savages is the only way to save the galaxy. And if I die here, then I die doing everything I could. And maybe someone else will go through what I've been through and realize how important it is that we kill them as fast as possible wherever we find them, wherever we meet them, however we can. Total annihilation. Or the galaxy will never go forward. They'll always be there feeding on us and ruining worlds faster than I ever could. Because if we lose, think about it, if we lose and they win and go out there and find the other big stellar civilizations we haven't, then all those other civilizations will ever know about Earth and humanity is that we are utter and complete monsters. Because it'll be the savages standing in for us. Nightmares made real. If for no other reason, forget our survival, then we must stop them from eating the entire galaxy like the locusts they really are. They will never stop. They'll just go on doing every world just like they did Stark 247.
Rex clamped his jaw shut and swallowed. He felt confused by all this, by his need to say it, to tell it to someone other than Sulla. It was a month's worth of talk for him babbled out in the span of a few minutes, but he needed the captain to know, to understand what he was doing, because deep down, he knew this was his last ride. McAfee hopped down from the engine compartment and told Greenhill to give her a try.
Win, lose or draw, finished Rex. My contribution to all this is that I deny these savages the right to the galaxy, one nuked planet at a time. No one man can save the galaxy. That's a fool's dream. But a million of us, committing a million small acts of defiance against the edge, that might do something. And until everyone catches up, here I stand. and that's enough for me. If I have to kill everyone on this planet just to kill them, then, yeah, that's what I'll do.
Horror. That was what was on her face, her eyes, her lips barely parted. Nothing like a dramatic silent scream, but the stark raving horror of what she'd just been told was there because there was nothing made up about anything he'd told her. No hyperbole. The near emotionless voice of Tyrus Rex was pure truth, no more, no less. Like some needle that pointed toward true galactic north, no matter what you did to it. She put her slender hand to her mouth, then lowered it just as quickly. She tried to compose herself. "How were you on a ship 50 years after Mars?" she asked, not knowing how to address anything else but the long years this war criminal was claiming to have lived.
"That was hundreds of years ago."
Tyrus Rex stepped close so that no one could hear what was said between them. He could see that she thought he was insane, a madman babbling about time machines and secret conversations with God. His eyes were blazing with fury, fury at her, fury at the galaxy, fury for the savages and what they'd done to everything.
"A sect of savages did things to me. Things that gave me the same long life they had. Back when I was a ranger for the old U.S. military. When they made me their slave on a lighthugger called the Obsidia."
Chapter 59. Two lone headlights appeared from down the tunnel. At first it seemed, at least to Captain Damacha, who was pulling some quick primary maintenance on the APC's turret, that it was a lone ground vehicle approaching. Just two headlights. But when the headlight on the right split off from the one on the left, it became clear that it was some sort of motorcycle pair streaking toward them at high speed. Greenhill and McAfee had just gotten the delivery truck started when savage gunfire erupted from the bikes. Both of them streaked in at incredible speed, firing at the rescued survivors, who hovered near the vehicle's cargo door. The wounded and dead fell to the ground. Others screamed or froze in horror at this new assault right at the moment they thought they'd been rescued. Rex returned fire, helmet in one hand, hand cannon in the other. The two bikes raced directly toward the crowd as if planning to drive right through them, full bursts opening up from mounted submachine guns on the fronts of their squat and long cycles. Captain Damacha jumped down to get the survivors out of the way, wincing through the chill at the jarring pain this sent into his leg. A burst of gunfire caught him and sent him sprawling along the dark subterranean road, but it also diverted the speeding attacker, who had to maneuver to miss him. "Macha!" shouted Andres. "Macha, damn it!" Damacha's last action had saved most of the survivors from being hit directly by gunfire and then run down as an afterthought. A second later, both bikes were red taillights moving into the darkness of the tunnel. But more were coming in fast.
"Get them loaded now," shouted Rex at the soldiers and civilians as he slammed his helmet over his head.
Pneumatic seals cleared and engaged. Internal HUD was active and showed targeting data. Behind them, the two initial attackers returning back for another pass, a sort of tightening of the noose.
"Switch places," Greenhill shouted to McAfee.
Instead of listening to the clear, concise commands that would save their lives, the panicked survivors scattered everywhere, while Greenhill and Martin did their best to cover and corral them. McAfee gunned the delivery truck's engine. Rex tried to fire at the two closing bikers, savage marines in light scout armor and faceless mirrored helmets, but survivors ran across his line of sight, blocking any kind of effective engagement picture. So instead, he kicked one biker as the scout savage passed by and sent the rider careening into a wall. The bike exploded in a fireball behind him, causing the survivors to scream even more than they already were.
"He's dead, sir," shouted Andres, who had dashed through the chaos to assist the downed Captain Damacha.
The second wave of bikes was now streaking in at full speed, firing wild and indiscriminately at both vehicles, the road, and any targets running in the tunnel black. Rex made his way to the APC, firing where he could get shots off and assessing the situation. Their quiet yet tense repairs inside the tunnel of just a minute before had now turned into a carnival of chaos and explosions punctuated by gunfire.
Rex had no idea what anyone's status was or where they were.
He found himself wishing he'd skipped the long talk and just gotten them all moving.
"Sound off,"
he ordered over the comm as he covered behind the door of the APC, firing barking bursts at passing riders.
"Covering at the truck,"
said Martin breathlessly. Automatic pulse fire reverberated in both real time and over the comm feed.
"Engaging,"
he gasped. A second later, Greenhill added a terse,
"Same here, Colonel."
"Behind the wheel and ready to roll," shouted McAfee enthusiastically.
If he was afraid, it didn't show in the slightest. In fact, his voice indicated he somehow believed that an epic road trip to a fabled rock concert was about to begin.
"Andres,"
shouted Rex, knocking down a savage rider with a brutal burst from the hand cannon at extremely close range. Several rounds struck the mounted Marine, and the bike went down as the rider went tumbling across the pavement.
"Loading survivors in," said Andres, then breathlessly, "we good to go, sir?"
"Get them out of here," ordered Rex.
He ducked inside to check the APC. Captain Davis had gone forward toward the driver's controls.
His mind ran through who was left, and for some reason he couldn't think of who he was missing, until Wild Man fired with a cacophonic boom that echoed down the tunnel, racing off into dark and hidden spaces like the bellow of some ancient monster.
The fuel tank of a closing bike erupted in explosive fire, spraying hot fuel across road and rider. Incredibly, the burning bike kept rolling even as its rider, full of flame, tried to dismount, flames crawling greedily across his armor.
Another bike zoomed in at the big sniper. Wild Man merely smacked the attacker in the helmet with the butt of his rifle, and the rider crashed a short distance later.
"We're leaving," Rex shouted.
But the big sniper seemed to have his own plan. He jogged toward the bike he'd just unmanned, picked it up, and stomped the starter, firing it up. He slung his rifle and gave Rex a thumbs up.
"Good enough," thought Rex and sealed the APC. "Get us out of here,"
Rex said to Davis at the controls. A moment later, the vehicle throttled up and lurched forward. Automatic gunfire ricocheted off its hull. Rex squeezed past the nuclear doomsday weapon and toward the turret control station.
"Where are we going, Tyrus?"
Davis asked, as though giving him another chance to spare the planet and the frozen population from a self-propagating thermonuclear annihilation. Daring Rex to be hard enough to actually make the call she knew he'd already made. Rex was still busy moving into the gunnery station, no easy feat in armor, when he noticed two little twin girls, dirty and shaking. He'd seen them in the crowd of survivors. In the chaos of the attack, they must have fled into the APC, seeking safety in any cubbyhole they could find, as the monsters that had devoured their family, friends, and everyone they'd ever known came howling out of the darkness. And now they were headed with him on a one-way mission to deliver a trigger nuke into the belly of his sworn enemies. One screamed and buried her face in her sister's dirty jacket, mistaking Rex for one of the savages. The other stared at Rex, hard and cold, daring him to hurt her sister, forcing her fear to the side in one last act to save the last person she had left.
"Oh, hell,"
thought Rex. And then, overcome,
"I said, where are we headed, Rex?"
The war criminal looked at the face of the defiant girl from behind his enclosed helmet, or bucket, as he liked to think of it.
"Continue on mission, Captain Davis."
Rex sighed, resolute, unchanging in a galaxy that seemed to want to change with every second.
"We're still hitting the savages."
Chapter 60. Calm faded quickly as the two vehicles headed off in different directions. The last thing Rex heard was McAfee swearing exuberantly as Greenhill and Martin engaged pursuing targets from their tenuous positions on the delivery truck turned evac cattle wagon. The screams of the rescued survivors competed with the weapons fire in the background. But the APC had problems of its own.
It was impossible to tell how many of the savage bikers had broken off to follow them. Rex wasn't even sure how many were out there to begin with, but it was clear that it was a lot of them, and they were swarming. Perhaps savage sensors were attuned to detect the chemical and energy signatures of the trigger nuke. That would explain the response and pursuit. 40 meters to a hard right, shouted Davis over the comm. Hang on. Rex was having a hard time acquiring targets on the gun's control screen, because the wild man on the bike was mixed in and firing at savages with a blaster pistol he'd picked up somewhere, maybe from the bike's former rider. And when he wasn't doing that, he was turning high-speed cycle racing into a contact sport as the pursuit shot through half-illuminated tunnels beneath the battle-ravaged city above. Rex got a clear field for half a second along the portside aft arc of the fleeing APC. He opened up with both barrels blazing. Bright fire smashed into three savage scout riders, riddling them with high-energy pulse shots and igniting their bikes. Parts and wheels went flying away and behind the APC, falling all over the tunnel-back trail and filling the tunnel with black smoke. And for a moment, Rex wondered if he hadn't jammed the wild man's game. But then the clear and distinctive outline of the big sniper filled the IR overlay, shooting through the smoke and flames in his commandeered cycle. And if anything, it seemed they now had even more savage scout riders in pursuit. They've probably figured out we're carrying the ball, shouted Davis over the howl of the APC's straining twin turbines. Rex knew Navy rats liked to call the big nuclear firecrackers balls, and she was probably right. The savages had to know it would eventually come to this. If they were working together, as it now seemed they were, then they would know how he'd dealt with their kind in the past. Not for the first time did Rex wish he'd just faded during the retreat after the initial battle and set out to do this all on his own. The opportunity for mission success had been highest at that pivotal moment, whether he'd lived or died. The APC pulled 3 Gs and turned on a dime as all 4 ball wheels heaved the vehicle in a new direction at top speed. Inertial gravity decking took some of the load, but the sudden drag on facial muscles made it decidedly evident that hard G's were being pulled. One of the girls, the one he assumed was younger because the angry one was clearly the dominant, tried to scream at the sudden shift in direction, but the breath was yanked from her chest. The angry one clearly felt it too, and she glared bloody murder at Rex, indicting him as a stand-in for all the wrongs of the last 6 weeks that had befallen her and her sister. Rex understood that, and he liked her for it. She'd fight the galaxy hard for what was hers, and that was precisely how humanity had to behave if they were going to make it out of all this. The galaxy was loaded with civilization enders. Ignoring them didn't make them go away. Fighting them did. And in the end, if it, the big it, was going to take you, then make it pay. Always. Despite the pull, Rex nodded at the defiant little girl who refused to die, making eye contact, willing her to know they wouldn't die in this moment of something they'd probably never experienced before in their entirely too short lives, that there would be a next moment, and that he would buy those moments for them until he was no longer able. Her gaze didn't soften, but the look in her eyes as the G's reached their peak trying to crush them all indicated that she'd accepted his contract. He could make no promises for any of the moments that lay beyond the next desperate ones, but that seemed to be enough for her, or maybe not. Rex wasn't particularly good with kids. Though Captain Davis was probably used to flying starships as opposed to driving ground combat vehicles, she was still a pro. And just as the hard turn moment seemed like it might last forever, like all the worst fears of the little girls would come true and the black well forming at the edges of their vision might just grow and swallow them forever, the moment passed. The vehicle shot forward along a narrow circular tunnel, accelerating hard to outrun the monsters that came for them. Rex dragged his mind away from consuming unconsciousness and scanned the mounted gun's targeting screen for the signature of the wild man. Nothing appeared. He watched the circular tunnel disappearing in banded illuminated lengths behind them. Still nothing. and then the wild man raced into the tunnel and right up onto the curving wall. Four savage scout riders followed while others missed the turn or made it badly, spilling from their bikes amid showers of sparks like bright fireworks with chemical ignition trails. "This is a venting access," announced Davis over the comm. "Gate controls are down. Brace for impact." Rex hadn't strapped in, and neither had the little girls, and there was no time. He grabbed them both, one with each gauntlet, and jammed his legs against the gunnery bulkhead. The vehicle surged forward and smashed through something amid two shrieking screams and a groan of rending metal. The sound of a witch's brittle fingernails raked the outer hull of the vehicle that protected them. "Damn it!" Rex swore as the girl's high-pitched shrieks flared across his helmet. He swore not because the sound hurt his ears, but because they were here, and they had no place in this horrible moment. And then the APC was weightless, falling. Sudden uncertainty once more. Because who knows how far it will fall, he thought. It crashed onto a new surface and continued forward. "Sorry," said Davis from the controls. "Unavoidable. But now it's a straight run ahead to the nest. Let's hope they left a light on." Rex was still clutching the two girls to him. Both had stopped screaming, but their eyes were squeezed tight shut. Then the youngest, the one he'd assumed was the most timid, looked up at him, her big dark eyes filled with tears. "Don't be mad at us."
"What?"
asked Rex. "We just came looking for our brother," said the older. "He's all we have left." And he knew in that moment that they'd faced fear and real monsters to find the last of their own, that they'd been brave enough to try, even though there was fear, which is what bravery is.
"I'm not," said Rex, letting them go and moving them over to the troop seats. "I'm not mad. Strap in."
He looked back at the targeting screen. There was no sign of the wild man.
Chapter 61. The wild man wasn't thinking about her smile when he plowed into the four remaining cycle scouts as he came down the side of the curving tunnel after the hard turn. All he saw was red murder, and here was the chance to get 4-for-1, even if it cost him everything. Fair enough. A good trade on any given day. Someone had once told him, some trader or storekeeper, when they'd figured out what his savage hunting game was, they'd told him, "Vengeance made you blind." Because in the end, that's all you saw, and everything was about that, even when it wasn't. Like that's a bad thing, he thought now as he slammed the bike into all four savages. He flung himself from the bike moments before impact, having braked just enough to manage a non-fatal rolling landing. It wasn't that he wanted to save himself. He just wanted to end a few more enemies in the last of whatever remained to him. That was enough. Fair trade. Two savages were dead, wrecked all over the long tubular passage, ruined by their speeding bikes that had suddenly lost control. And two were down and slowly getting up. For a big man, he moved fast, like a bear suddenly coming to life to chase and hunt you down, no matter how swiftly you ran. He was like that as the fight began. No longer a wild man, now a wild animal. His first instinct was to go for the one on his right. He pulled his rifle off his back with no time to spare as the savage rose to one knee and pulled a sidearm. Wild man fired from the hip and blew the savage marine in half. And then the second savage slammed into him, knocking him to the floor, which was a big mistake for the Marine. Like some liquid snake that had only ever known wrestling reversals, the big man was on top of the armored Marine almost instantly, both paws grabbing at the savage's helmet, slamming it into the hard gray concrete again and again and again.
"See that, darling?"
"I see it, babe."
The wild man watched his own image in the dull reflective sheen of the faceless helmet. Watched himself go from far away to up close as he raised the Marine's head off the concrete floor, then suddenly rush away as he slammed the helmet down with a brutal shove. And again. And again. His eyes were like a mad demon's. And when he'd finished, the helmet had just come to pieces.
as had the brain inside. He came to himself and stood, his body suddenly breaking out into a cold sweat as he returned to the reality of the chase through the tunnel system and the realization that the APC had gone on without him. Certain that he was dead, already he could hear more cycles coming down the tunnels after him, picking up the trail their brothers had been intent on. They would come here, he told himself, grabbing the big rifle off the floor. They would come here, right to him, and he could do them all, babe. He went down on the floor of the tunnel and used a wrecked bike as a firing position. The next wave of bikes was coming fast, throttling up and roaring as their riders electronically scented the prey they'd been ordered to hunt down and destroy. The APC, the people who'd been kind enough to take him along and make him one of their own, coalition soldiers. That had been nice. It had been a long time since he'd had anyone else in his life, and they'd been good to him. Talk to him, even when he gave them so little in return. Words had never been easy for him, even before. The least he could do was give them more space to do what needed to be done, what they'd come to do. Rifle stabilized, he sighted in on the distant leader of the next savage scout team. How about him, darling? That's the one, babe. Yes, ma'am. And then she would smile. Smile so big that all the bad things just didn't matter anymore. That would be good, here, at the end of himself. The rifle was roaring out in steady booms as his mind worked the shots and his fingers did that reloading trick he didn't even think about. Smoke and cordite filled the tunnel as he shot them down one by one. And still they came on.
Chapter 62. The APC didn't sound too good. Something had gone wrong in the undercarriage or the drivetrain, and it was growing worse by the second.
I'd stop, but I'd have no idea what to look for or what to do about it, said Davis over the comm.
Keep moving, said Rex in reply. How much longer until we reach the Hulk?
10 minutes down this road, and we'll be right near one of our cargo hatches, she paused. Then what, Rex?
Silence followed her question for a long minute.
Then we shove the weapon out the back, arm the trigger for detonation, and try to make it back to the Chang in time to dust off.
What if the savages try to disable it?
Thought about that. Was worried they might. I worked something out back here so that any attempt to tamper will activate the ignition sequence. There's no way to disarm it except via my armor's authenticating system.
What if they try to dump it and just lift off?
It's geo-trapped. Moving it will cause it to detonate.
It looks like you've got this all figured out then, she said with contempt. Clearly she was frustrated that no amount of reason or logic would dissuade him from ruining this world forever.
Not my first time.
But she wasn't done. She tried again. And if they do tamper, because they either don't care or don't understand the markings, then we get cooked too?
Affirmative, answered Rex.
They entered an 8-lane highway along the subsurface of Hilltop District. They passed the occasional abandoned vehicle, but it was wide open and devoid of savage assets or patrols.
They probably didn't think anyone would get this close, said Davis as she called out distance and location markers.
Rex bent forward over the gunner station screen and then looked over into the troop compartment, where the two twin girls were securely strapped in.
It's going to get rough for a few minutes,
he began awkwardly.
So?
He was going to tell them that they needed to be brave, but then he remembered that they'd come into the city looking for their brother on their own during the middle of a savage invasion. So, they already had bravery covered.
I need you to stay strapped in. Let me do the work I need to do, and then we're going to get out of here. I'll get you to a ship that's going to rescue you, okay?
The two girls looked at each other, then the older one spoke.
What about Austin?
Rex said nothing. It seemed they took this for confusion on his part, not understanding who they were asking after. The younger one clarified.
He's our brother, the one we came looking for.
He's...
All you have, right? Said Rex. I remember. Just stay strapped in,
he added and turned back to the gunnery station, not knowing what else he could say to them that would be of any comfort. A moment later, the massive entrance back into the daylight of Hilltop District appeared down the distant length of the tunnel. It was full daylight now on the surface. Rex checked the time, just barely afternoon. He felt suddenly tired as sunlight filtered through the opening, revealing swirling dust motes and falling ash in the forward view feed. It had been a long time since he'd slept. But he drove that thought from his mind and charged up the APC's defensive gun.
I thought you said we'd come up underneath the hulk.
Eventually, Davis replied. Gotta spend some time up top and then make sure of a passover. The vehicle started taking fire as it neared the exit. The savages did have a checkpoint set up, but not a great one. It didn't even slow them down. Captain Davis smashed right through the improvised barrier and the two Marines who refused to move. It seemed they'd been optimistic about stopping the intruding vehicle with automatic fire. Instead, they were crushed beneath its massive ceramic ball wheels. The APC took the off-ramp and emerged midway up a street that ran from the base of Hilltop to its highest point. This area had been shelled badly by the Coalition. Here was where the stories tall walking mech had finally been found and destroyed by Coalition artillery, resulting in extensive collateral damage. But even the rubble and smashed ruin of the once grand buildings of New Vega, a sight that should have been apocalyptically awe-inspiring, was dwarfed by what drew the eye and demanded that attention be paid. The Nest. Here, near and close, the kilometers-long colony ship loomed like the end of the world. The road passed beneath some sort of massive wing section, and beneath this wing, which was easily 20 stories over their heads, towers jutted down from the underside. Construction cranes and loading gantries raced up to meet these structures. At first, they looked to be manned by repair crews on an epic scale. At first. They're not repairing it, said Captain Davis. Her voice was frantic, almost on the verge of hysteria as she drove hard to avoid hitting the ground structures. They're dismantling it. They're staying. Rex had seen savage hulks from far closer than most humans had ever cared to. Their gargantuan scale didn't take away his breath like it did to others, didn't impress him, didn't make him question his place in the galaxy. The savages weren't gods. They were monsters, and monsters had to be slain. He existed only for that, and he'd accepted that fate a long time ago. Besides, he'd seen and destroyed far bigger ships than this one. If anything, this one was more like an escort for some of the more massive light-huggers from the last days of Earth's darkest hours, when the supposed best and brightest had fled the ruin they'd created, telling everyone with such extreme certainty that they'd been right, despite the lessons of history. The failure to properly execute their extreme thinking could be blamed on those they were leaving behind, but they would try again. Out there in the dark, safe within their floating science experiments. Just like Stark 247. Just like Dachau and Buchenwald and every other camp that most of humanity had forgotten. Man's inhumanity to man. Out here, even out here.
They're not human anymore,
muttered Rex through gritted teeth at the grounded savage hulk looming over them. The savages were still collecting survivors, still organizing the captured, storing up calories for the winter like insects, tearing apart their own ship to make a new, terrible, and twisted home. They'd get it right despite the lessons of history, if only because they were so certain this time, just like they'd been every other time. Colonel! The transmission came in broken and distorted. It was Sergeant Major Andres.
Do you read?
There was pulse fire in the background.
In case you're still operational, sir. Proceeding on foot. Government transit.
Rex tried to get something through, but they weren't receiving. They were too far down and, from the sound of it, engaged in a running gunfight on foot. They were still beneath Hilltop and on foot. they'd never make it in time to meet the Chang's departure. The APC drove off the road, cut onto another one, and entered a tunnel. When it burst out the other side, it turned hard beneath an overpass, jumped the barrier, and shot up a very steep grade. Everything inside that wasn't bolted down slid backward.
"Hang on back there,"
Rex called out to the girls. Davis kept the engines roaring at maximum capacity as the APC zoomed up the hill and exploded forth, all wheels in the air, before landing hard on a hilly paddock. The vehicle rocked and threatened a fishtail from the rapid application of brakes, but at last it came to a halt in front of a grand cargo ramp leading down from the Savage Hulk onto the shattered streets of New Vega. There were dozens more doors erupting from the ship all down its length. Rex scanned the surroundings through the up-top weapons screen. There were no savages in their immediate vicinity, just the gently drifting grass that carpeted the edge of some park.
"Can you get us inside through that ramp?"
he asked Davis. But the captain had other ideas. "They'll never make it, Rex. You heard Andre's transmission. Not on foot, not down there, and engaged. We've got to go back for them." Rex growled and then popped the hatch to exit the APC. He pointed a finger at the girls, growled, "Stay here." Then dashed back to the cargo hatch and accessed the lift control. A moment later, the cargo deck was exposed, and so was the repulsor palletized trigger nuke. The wind continued to sweep the heights of Hilltop, and Rex monitored his HUD displays for signs of oncoming trouble. But he saw nothing, no threats, no movement. This savage colony seemed to be the type that thought so highly of itself and its occupation that the prospect of trouble coming to its front doorstep was unthinkable. They had thrown everything into holding New Vega when the coalition forces attacked, but their overwhelming success had apparently caused them to overextend their perimeter. And now Rex was but a few yards away, close enough that he could inspect every pockmark on the hull, see every telltale sign of travel through the deepest and darkest of space. "Rex?"
"I'm pulling out the trigger nuke. They made their choice when they left the Chang with me, same as you. Keep an eye out for savages. They'll pick up the signature soon enough."
He disconnected the nuke from the travel locks and pulled it from the cargo deck. It came toward him as easily as a cloud drifts across the sky, and he let it wander out onto the dark and ruined street that climbed skyward beside this beached whale of an old starship. This savage dream of a new world long ago on Earth, now a nightmare unfolding on this world. "Here they come," shouted Davis. "Whatever it is you're doing, do it fast, Rex. We got savvy responders moving in on foot." She knew what he was doing, but even now she was distancing herself from the act, the weapon, the solution to the savage crisis, even if she didn't realize it. She knew the people on this planet, those trapped in the storage bubbles below the surface, those awaiting transfer to that gruesome fate, and those who had fought along with them to reach this apocalyptic end-all would pay the price. And she couldn't live with that, so she'd begun to distance herself, to find some way of living with what was going to happen in the next few hours.
As Rex popped the shell on the trigger nuke, the first rounds zipped through the artificial night the giant ship created beneath its bulk. Tracer fire from some heavy automatic tried to range the APC. Rex entered a code and unlocked the arming display. Nothing fancy. He enabled Geotrap and set the timer for 1800 local. And as he turned away, he heard a distant noise, a voice, so faint that at first he thought he'd imagined it. "Help us." He heard it more clearly that time, perhaps amplified by the wonderment that was his helmet's tech. Someone was screaming from somewhere. Rex took a few steps toward the edge of an embankment and looked down. He saw hundreds of people pressed up against a wire fence, their haunted eyes suddenly hopeful, their skeletal arms straining through the wire. An internment camp. He looked back. The United Worlds emblem was proudly painted on the side of the APC near the twin guns and was likely just visible to the camp over the crest of the hill. It was that emblem,
that caused the prisoners to scream for help. And scream they did, a myriad of tired, frantic, and pitifully hopeful voices, all pleading for the same thing. Help. Help us. Heavy machine gun bullets zipped wildly above Rex, sent by the approaching savage Marines. For now, they were still too far away to be a threat, but that would change soon enough. Static came over the comm. It was Specialist Martin.
Be advised. Any surviving assets on New Vega, we are engaged near the underground subway access at the bottom level of the hilltop subterranean complex. We are on foot with civilian survivors. Sergeant Major Andres is down. Colonel, if you are out there, we need help, sir. We're not going to make it.
Help us. They all needed it, demanded it, of Tyrus Rex. And he was helping in the way he knew best. Rex ran back into the APC. The trigger nuke was armed, ready to blow if the savages messed with it in any way. Then it would be all over. He'd done what he'd come to do despite everyone and everything. That was the way it had to be in the galaxy. The winner got all the marbles, so it was best to play for keeps.
Help us, shouted the mass of prisoners, their shouting growing in fervor and pitch as Rex disappeared from view. Now he would do what he could for the soldiers who had followed him, who had volunteered to see it through, even after humanity's best effort to contain their worst enemy had met with overwhelming defeat.
Do we just leave them? Asked Davis. She was talking about the scarecrows behind the wire. Savage weapons fire was growing in accuracy. It pinged against the hull and kicked up the dirt around Rex's feet. But it seemed to Rex that they were firing tentatively, perhaps aware of what he had delivered and not wanting to set it off with an errant shot, were such a thing possible.
There's thousands just in this section, Captain. We can't rescue them.
His voice was plain, his words matter of fact, and she hated him for it. And hated herself because he was right. We could at least set them free, she offered and heard herself begging, trying to make a deal where none could be made, at least give them a chance.
A pair of savage Marines ran down the ramp, reaching the APC before the first wave of attackers Davis had spotted farther out were close enough to engage. They sent a storm of hurried shots, all of which danced alongside their target, hitting only dirt, road, and APC. The savages had reason to be excited. Tyrus Rex had come to settle up for what they'd done. Rex aimed his hand cannon and, with a sweeping motion, shattered their helmets and pulped their brains, leaving them to collapse and roll down the ramp. More would be coming from the same direction. It was time to move. Rex climbed into the APC and moved toward the gunnery station.
They've never had a chance, Captain. When the trigger nuke goes, the whole planet gets cooked. Now get us back into the tunnels. We're going to go down there and try to get ours out.
The savages were only now responding to the new threat that had arrived at their very doors. Their business and focus had no doubt been elsewhere, out along the lines, down in the tunnel complex. Rex and Davis had had the area to themselves for a time, but that time was clearly coming to a close, quickly. More small arms fire pinged against their vehicle's outer hull. And soon, larger munitions would be used. The APC howled to life and spun a hard turn back the way they came, traveling over rough and ruined streets, leaving its precious gift behind.
Oh, Davis began the start of